From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, diplomatic efforts to ease Ukraine tensions, Turkey's local elections seen as a referendum on Erdogan's rule, getting humanitarian aid to Syrians in need, plus we'll go to Los Angeles to learn about green hotels. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said late Sunday that the United States and Russia agreed on the need for a diplomatic solution for Ukraine during talks in Paris. He met with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Mr. Kerry spoke to reporters after their meeting.
In a frank conversation this evening with Foreign Minister Lavrov, I made clear that the United States still considers the Russian actions to be illegal and illegitimate, and Russians' actions over the past several weeks have placed it at odds, obviously, with the rule of law and the international community, and we still believe on the wrong side of history. But any real progress in Ukraine must include a pullback of the very large Russian force that is currently massing along Ukraine's borders. And tonight, I raised with the foreign minister our strong concern about these forces. We believe that these forces are creating a climate of fear and intimidation in Ukraine.
In a separate news conference, Mr. Lavrov said Ukraine can't function as a unified state and should be a loose federation of regions that choose their own economic model, language, and religion.
Ми виразили несовпадающие точки зрения относительно причин этого кризиса, но тем не менее мы согласились.
Mr. Lavrov also said he and Secretary Kerry had differing views about the cause of the Ukrainian crisis, but were in agreement on searching for common ground to find a diplomatic settlement. Sunday's meeting in Paris came after an hour-long phone conversation on Friday between President Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin, in which Mr. Obama urged Mr. Putin to withdraw his troops from the border with Ukraine. As those diplomatic efforts continue in hopes of containing that crisis in Ukraine, U.S. Congress is expected to finalize an aid package for Kiev, as well as sanctions against Russia for its annexation of Crimea. VOA's Michael Bowman reporting now, a bill likely will go to the White House for President Obama's signature tomorrow.
As Russian forces mass along Ukraine's southern and eastern borders, the U.S. House of Representatives is preparing to give Congress's final approval to $1 billion in loan guarantees for Ukraine and economic penalties against Russian officials. House Speaker John Boehner.
Our goal is to work together and to get this bill done as quickly as possible.
Debate in both houses of Congress has featured some of the fiercest rhetoric aimed at Russia since the Cold War. Republican Senator John McCain compared Russia's territorial expansion under President Vladimir Putin to that of Germany under Adolf Hitler.
It's obvious, with his troops massed on the border of eastern Ukraine, he is contemplating further action. Whether he does so or not, I'm not sure. But I think his calculation has got to do with the cost-benefit ratio of further aggression against a sovereign nation.
Although it has taken lawmakers several weeks to settle on exact measures to back Kiev and punish Moscow, their desire to act was never in doubt. Democratic Senator Robert Menendez.
The world is watching, and the world's superpower cannot be seen as incapable of rising to Russia's challenge.
Russia has both condemned and downplayed the significance of international sanctions. While pursuing a diplomatic track to contain the crisis, the Obama administration says Moscow must pay a price for its actions.
The sanctions that the United States and the European Union have imposed will continue to grow if Russia doesn't change course. But as I said yesterday in Brussels, we are continually hopeful that Russia walks through the door of diplomacy and works with all of us to try to resolve this issue in a peaceful way.
But Russia rejects calls for Crimea to be returned to Ukraine. Russia's ambassador in Washington, Sergei Kislyak.
Crimea is a part of Russian Federation.
Asked if Russia will seize more Ukrainian territory, the ambassador said, quote, "We are not planning to." Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has warned his political foes that they will pay the price for accusing him and his party of corruption. Mr. Erdogan spoke Sunday to thousands of supporters in Ankara as he claimed victory in local elections seen as a referendum on his rule. Political columnist Semih Adis of the Turkish newspaper Taraf and Al-Monitor website tells VOA the polls are more than just local elections.
The government has turned them into a plebiscite on its credibility. The government is accused of corruption. Ministers have had to resign over this. There are tapes that have been leaked to the media that implicate the prime minister itself. So the government is really putting its all into these elections.
Early impartial results show the prime minister's Justice and Development Party winning about 45% of the vote, with the opposition Republican People's Party carrying about 25%. The Erdogan warning comes just days after his government blocked nationwide access to YouTube after the video-sharing website circulated what it thought to be an audio recording implicating senior officials in corruption. The audio is purported to be of Turkey's foreign minister discussing options with other senior officials for staging bogus attacks on Turkey from Syrian soil to create a pretext for war. Egypt's announced the dates for the first round of voting for a new president, that is. Voting will be held as it stands now on May 26th and 27th, with results expected in early June. And if a second round is necessary, it would be held in mid-June. Egypt's Election Commission says candidate nominations will open later today and will be taken until April the 20th. Country's powerful former military chief, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who led the overthrow of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi last July, has announced his bid for office. Arab citizens of Israel observed an annual day of protest. We get more now from Robert Berger at the VOA Bureau in Jerusalem.
Israeli Arabs held marches and rallies to mark Land Day, an annual protest against the confiscation of Arab land by the State of Israel. The event commemorates a mass demonstration against land confiscations in Galilee in 1976, when six Arab protesters were killed by Israeli security forces. Israeli Arabs make up about 20% of the population, and Land Day is an opportunity for them to highlight what they see as discrimination by the Jewish state toward the Arab minority. So there was a general strike across the Arab sector. Talal al-Karnawi is the mayor of Rahat, a Bedouin city in southern Israel. He said all schools, businesses, and government offices were closed in protest over the confiscation of land by the State of Israel and the destruction of homes that were built illegally. The Israeli government has refused to recognize and provide services for many Bedouin villages that were built without permits, reinforcing a feeling among Israeli Arabs that they are second-class citizens. Israeli Arab analyst Wadia Abu Nasser.
People are feeling as if they are with less and less lands, and the feeling that you are not welcomed in your own country, it is a very, very bad feeling.
The Israeli government says the nation has come a long way toward easing discrimination and improving the plight of its Arab citizens. Officials point out Arabs enjoy the same health care benefits as Jews and have representatives in parliament. Israeli officials say that in the wake of the Arab Spring revolutions, Israeli Arabs are much better off than their brothers in other Middle Eastern countries, such as Syria, Egypt, and Iraq. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Two Spanish journalists returned home on Sunday, winning their freedom after being kidnapped by an Al-Qaeda-linked group and held for 6 months in Syria. It was not clear whether the two journalists had escaped or were released. Javier Espinoza and freelance photographer Ricardo Garcia Villanova was abducted That happened on September 16th as they tried to cross the Syrian border to Turkey after covering the civil war in Syria. Espinoza told reporters they want to thank all of those who have cared for them and made it possible for them to come home. Spain's El Mundo newspaper identified their captors as members of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, a jihadist faction in Syria linked to al-Qaeda's Iraqi affiliate. UN humanitarian chief Valerie Amos has painted a bleak picture of the situation in Syria. She told reporters after a private briefing to the Security Council that the situation for millions of desperate Syrians has not gotten better and will not improve, she says, unless there is a full and unhindered access to them.
I told the Council that we need to see a significant step change in the speed and scale of humanitarian aid if we are to save lives and keep pace with the ever-growing needs. This piecemeal approach, despite the best efforts of humanitarian workers on the ground, is not delivering change fast enough.
Russian Ambassador Vitaly Churkin said on his way into the briefing that while the situation is very difficult, he believes there has been some progress in implementing the Council's resolution. On the subject of barrel bombs being used by the Assad government, Syrian Ambassador Bashar al-Jafri had this to say in response to a reporter question.
We drop weapons against terrorist groups, not against civilians.
So you don't deny that you're dropping barrel bombs on civilians?
No, but we are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
But they're landing on
and
civilians.
And sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians. These civilians are our own people.
He went on to say that such images were propaganda broadcast by Syria's enemies and blamed civilian deaths on the dirty petrodollars coming from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey that are financing the regime's opponents.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Well, the search for that missing Malaysian passenger plane is in its fourth week now. On Sunday, 9 planes and 9 ships searched approximately 252 square kilometers of ocean looking for signs of Flight 370. A pilot of the Australian P3 Orion aircraft that went out Sunday reported sighting some objects. Flight Lieutenant Russell Adams spoke late Sunday to reporters after his plane returned to Perth.
Of interest today, we did encounter an area within approximately 5 nautical miles, which included at least 4 orange-coloured objects, greater than approximately 2 metres in size each. I must stress that we can't confirm the origin of these objects. However, the details of these, in association with a GPS buoy, have been passed on to our Rescue Coordination Centre. It's for the Rescue Coordination Centre to analyse these and send vessels to investigate as they see appropriate. However, for my crew and from our perspective, this was the most visibility we had of any objects in the water and gave us the most promising leads.
Objects previously recovered were described as fishing equipment and flotsam. No objects recovered have yet been verified as being from the Boeing 777. Chinese relatives of passengers on Flight 370 demanded on Sunday that Malaysian authorities provide them with evidence that the Malaysian Airlines plane had crashed into the sea. Tensions were running high at the Beijing Hotel, where Chinese relatives met with Malaysian government and airline representatives and demanded answers. Wen Wanchang is the father of one of the missing passengers. He said they have not provided evidence that the plane went down in the sea. What we want is evidence, he said. We know there were signals being sent by at least 4 transmitters. Even this they cannot provide as proof, he said. On what grounds are they saying the plane went down to the sea? The relatives also demanded the airline set up meetings with representatives from Boeing, from Rolls-Royce, and Inmarsat, saying the lack of information was troubling. Rolls-Royce built the plane's engines. Inmarsat, a British satellite telecommunications company, provided the satellite data that was used to map the jet's final route. Malaysia Airlines also said it would fly family members to Perth, where the current search is based, but only after wreckage was confirmed to have been found. Two-thirds of the passengers aboard the plane, which disappeared on a flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing, were Chinese. China has urged Malaysia to be more open about the investigation, while Malaysian officials have defended their handling of the probe and the information they have provided to passengers' relatives. Also in the news, detainees suspected of belonging to the Islamist militant group Boko Haram overpowered guards at the headquarters of Nigeria's secret police in Abuja Sunday, triggering a one-hour gun battle that killed at least 21 people. Jailbreaks by Islamists in Nigeria are common. 2 weeks ago, Boko Haram militants attacked the main Nigerian military barracks in the northeast, freeing dozens of prisoners. Most were reported killed, however, trying to escape. Health officials in Guinea are on high alert with 8 new confirmed cases of Ebola, including 1 fatality in Conakry, the capital city that is home to at least 2 million people. Aid organizations say the spread of the disease to the city poses new challenges for those trying to contain the outbreak. Jennifer Lazuta reporting now from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
West Africa's first ever outbreak of the Ebola virus, which began in Guinea's southeastern forest region last month, is spreading. Guinea's Ministry of Health says 8 people have tested positive for the virus in Conakry. 1 person has died. The World Health Organization confirmed that there have been 8 suspected cases in Liberia, including 6 fatalities. In Sierra Leone, 6 people are believed to have contracted Ebola. 5 of them have died. This brings the total number of suspected cases to 125, including 81 deaths. Roland Berahudugu is the regional head of disaster risk management for the humanitarian organization Plan International. He spoke to VOA from Conakry.
As you know, Conakry is the biggest city of the country, and people are really a very crowded city. So the issue is how to prevent people from getting contaminated and really cope with the situation and control the epidemic at a specific place.
Nearly 2 million people currently call Conakry home. Many of them reside in slum areas where living conditions are poor. Throughout much of the city, there is a widespread lack of access to water and sanitation. Berahudugu said this could increase the speed with which the outbreak spreads. The Ebola virus, which is one of the most contagious viral diseases, is spread through contact with bodily fluids, such as sweat, blood, and saliva, an infected person or animal. There are no known vaccines or treatments available for Ebola. The only way to stop its spread is by preventing further infections. Last week, when the epidemic was still contained to Guinea's forest region, the government forbid the sale and consumption of bats and bat meat. Bats are believed to be a natural host of the Ebola virus and could be contributing to its spread. Berahudugu said that while this is an important prevention measure in rural areas, proper hygiene is the best way to control an outbreak in an urban center, such as Conakry.
In Conakry, the people here don't really eat a lot of white meat, so the animal to human is less serious issue, but it's human to human contamination. So as you know, the disease, the virus is in the human secretions, the body secretions, so having the individual good hygiene will prevent people from transmitting the disease, also from getting it from others.
Aid organizations are now working with the government to educate Conakry's residents about proper hygiene measures, such as hand washing and food preparation, using local radio, TV, and text messages. On Friday, the Ministry of Health urged people to immediately report any suspected cases of Ebola and not to touch anyone, alive or dead, who is suspected of having the virus. Health centers in Conakry are now offering treatment for all suspected Ebola cases free of charge. Jennifer Lazuta for VOA News, Dakar.
In the past 12 months, thousands of children in Cameroon have died of severe diarrhea caused by rotavirus, with thousands more said to be hospitalized. United Nations has come in to help with the vaccine, but medics say the situation is difficult given the acute shortage of clean water in the major towns. Moki Edwin Kenzita has more from Yaoundé.
5-month-old Gracious Yinyoi cries as he is administered Rotatec, a vaccine that protects babies against common types of rotaviruses. Dr. Nula Desiree says the baby is one of a million Cameroonian children they are out to save.
Le rotavirus provoque une maladie diarrhéique beaucoup plus courante.
The doctor says rotavirus has been causing diarrhea among children under 5 and is especially dangerous for kids between 12 and 24 months. The virus can lead to severe dehydration, and if nothing is done, the child dies. The United Nations says children vaccinated against rotavirus are 70% less likely to be hospitalized for diarrhea compared to unvaccinated children. But Dr. Desiree says vaccines alone will not solve the problem in Cameroon.
Il faut dire que globalement c'est un problème d'hygiène, d'hygiène de salubrité, d'hygiène du milieu, d'hygiène corporelle.
He says it must be made clear that the sickness is due to poor hygiene and sanitation. And he adds that people must have access to good quality water and deep latrines. Dr. Desiree says the vaccine without sanitation will be ineffective and the disease will continue to spread. Many towns in Cameroon are suffering from an acute shortage of drinkable water. The capital, Yaoundé, has gone without sufficient water for 3 months. Meanwhile, 70% of people in rural areas do not use latrines and prefer to defecate in bushes. Dr. Marie Kobela of the country's National Vaccination Program told VOA that basic hygiene in Cameroon needs to be improved.
Améliorer l'approvisionnement en eau, y compris le traitement et le stockage, l'hygiène du milieu, l'utilisation des latrines.
She says improve potable water supply, improve hygiene, use toilets, quickly go for oral rehydration if the child has diarrhea. Dr. Kobela adds that if a child vomits and if there are blood spots in what he or she throws up, the child should be taken immediately to a hospital. In Africa, rotavirus kills more than 600 children each day, and thousands more are hospitalized or require clinic visits. But the facilities are always not available. The United Nations is supporting the rotavirus vaccination program by making available about 1 million doses of vaccine. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA Special English, a way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
Many businesses are adopting green practices and products as well, and business owners say it's not only good for the environment, it's also good for their bottom line. VOA's Michael Sullivan reporting now on one hotel near the busy Los Angeles International Airport, which is going green.
They use environmentally safe products and do sustainable waste disposal in a program encouraged by city officials. The largest of the five, the Hilton Los Angeles Airport, has more than 1,200 guest rooms. And manager Grant Coonley says the program has saved money.
The lighting retrofit was almost $200,000 a year from last year to this year. Waste removal is down 10% from a year ago.
As costs are cut, energy and water use have dropped. Reservations are up. Coonley says guests are more likely to book a hotel that has a conservation program.
There's a lot of groups requesting this. They're requesting the recycle bins.
The hotel uses low-energy lights and water-efficient toilets. Manager Coonley says the staff is behind the program.
Because for the most part, I think even at home, a lot of people are recycling by the three different garbage cans that might be at your house. So they wanted to know what the hotel's doing, too.
The hotel is working with Green Seal, a nonprofit group that certifies environmentally sound products and services. Green Seal President Arthur Weissman says certification takes careful tracking by a restaurant or hotel.
Looking at the energy it uses, the water it uses, any of the waste that it produces, the chemicals that it uses.
Weissman says Coonley's Hotel is meeting the standard for green certification. His organization certifies a range of products in addition to services like hotels.
So we do paper products, cleaning products, paint, other building maintenance products. We do windows. We also do windows.
Weissman says today, green practices are good for business, but there are more important reasons for going green. He has written a recent book exploring the issues.
I call them moral values, our care and concern for others, other people, other nations, and indeed other species.
He says most businesses and governments have not yet modified their wasteful and polluting practices, but he says they must for our well-being and the health of the planet. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. Good to have you with us. A reminder, you can always find us on the internet at voanews.com. Hope you'll stay with us. The latest world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Monday.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late March, as part of the U.S. government's drive toward gender equality and global elimination of gender-based violence, or GBV, the Department of State, working through its Bureau for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, introduced the Gender-Based Violence Emergency Response and Protection Initiative. This program aims to provide immediate financial assistance for survivors of severe gender-based violence, as well as for those who find themselves under threat of imminent attack due to their gender or gender identity. This is a first-of-its-kind global program dedicated to aiding survivors of extreme forms of gender-based violence everywhere. The network will be funded by the State Department and run by a consortium of non-governmental organizations. Those organizations include Vital Voices Global Partnership, ProMundo U.S., the International Organization for Migration, and the American Bar Association Rule of Law Initiative. The new Gender-Based Violence Emergency and Protection Initiative builds on and complements past U.S. efforts to eliminate gender-based violence, said U.S. Deputy Secretary Robert Burns. It has three clear objectives. First, survivors of gender-based violence will help receive urgent support, like immediate medical help, emergency shelter, psychosocial support, and legal assistance. Second, the program will provide targeted training for governments and civil society on GBV-related laws and advocacy. These trainings support men and women working to put an end to gender-based violence. And finally, all partners in the initiative will work to develop a regional and international network of service providers and activists in 11 country hubs. From Mexico to Mali and Tajikistan to Thailand, these networks will share data, lessons learned, and best practices, coordinate emergency responses, and work together on shared advocacy efforts, said Deputy Secretary Burns.
Gender-based violence is an inexcusable crime and an affront to dignity and human rights. It robs people, disproportionately women and girls, of their potential and threatens their mental, physical, and reproductive health. It denies economic opportunity and undermines economic growth. And it imperils the safety and stability of communities and of countries.
To make a lasting impact, he said, we need to match the scope of this challenge with the intensity of our response. It will require each and every one of us to stay focused, to continue to marry words with deeds, and to never be content with cheering from the sidelines when we can join the global effort to end the epidemic of gender-based violence once and for all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.